Ron, I just wanted to thank you for being here with us this weekend at Grace Church and also for doing this interview with us for the forum readers and listeners. Tell us a little bit about how you got here. And as I say that, I mean specifically, how does one go from being a local church pastor to being head of a Christian publishing house? When I've thought about that before, it just seems like a different type, in terms of profile, person would end up in a role like that. Tell us a little bit about your journey.
Sure. You know, when I think about the journey that I was on, sometimes it wasn't always the pleasant mountaintops and valleys that one would go through, and you kept wondering, why am I going through this? Hindsight is always the best perspective, but in the middle of it, it's rather a tedious journey. I started out in college thinking God was preparing me to be a chaplain, so thus my military background, and I really did everything I could to prepare to be a good chaplain who had rapport with the troops, everything from going to infantry officer basic, jump school, air assault school, nuclear, biological, chemical warfare. I mean, I had quite a good military resume, but God was using that as preparation time in my life, not destination, even though at that time I was preparing as if it were. And so he kind of closed the door. I tried to crawl into the window. He closed it. I said, okay, God, you win. And I pursued pastoring, which is where he opened up a door. And in the beginning, I was bivocational and loved it. And really, it opened up a whole world of evangelism and relationships that I couldn't replace any other way, that later as a lead pastor, full-time ministry, I missed that bivocation. Well, part of that bivocation, I worked in marketing. I started out working for a newspaper, was an account executive there, and then a Fox affiliate, a TV Fox affiliate, hired me on as an account executive. So I designed campaigns for clients in order to help position them and their organization to succeed. And from there, I had clients asking me about my advice for print, electronic, outdoor, you name it. And so I decided to open my own advertising agency, and I got a partner, and he and I opened up the firm. First year we're in business, first full year, we built almost $1 million. So God gave me this business background, printing, design, this whole area. And then I went on to full-time Christian ministry. And it was during that journey that God said, okay, how are we losing our teenagers? And I was asking the question before there were books written about it. And I was noticing that at the point somebody became a driver of a car, they drove away from church. And as I began to study that, men like Jonathan Thigpen, Keith Kennemer, and a handful of others started opening my eyes, and I dove deeper into this. And one of them looked at me and said, Ron, if you're going to have a great youth program, which is what I was trying to do as a lead pastor, was really invest in our young people that we were losing, they said, you got to start with the children. And I started understanding how we build precept upon precept, season of life upon season of life. And so that journey got me involved in Christian education. And so I left the lead pastor to go on staff at another church as minister of education and executive pastor. And that opened the door to me going to Randall House, which never was my intended destination. That was God's doing, not mine. That was not a journey I was heading for.
So you certainly had a pretty significant ministry background as far as in the local church setting. But you did have a business background, and you did know
and
the
marketing
world
and printing and design. So yeah, it was God blending those unique skill sets, like He does for any leader in a local church. That blending, whether it's counseling or business or whatever background that we bring, God has a way of weaving all that together in a great mosaic. Okay.
So now you've been at this 10+ years, closer to 15.
Closer to 15, yeah.
And as you think about it and survey the landscape, thinking of specifically not just publishing houses in general, but denominational publishing houses, what does it look like in your mind to be a viable Christian publisher in today's world? And maybe what's entailed in that is thinking about maybe what's changed, if anything, in recent years.
Yeah, absolutely. Asking what it's like to be a viable Christian publisher, I would like to meet the person who claims to be one, including ourselves. Christian publishing in general, is a very challenging industry right now. There are some trends out there, both electronic as well as local church habits, that are challenging the very existence and viability of every publisher. I've had the pleasure of the last 3 years of being the president of the Protestant Church-Owned Publishers Association, where there are 43 different publishers, Lifeway, United Methodist, Nazarene, Wesleyan, all of these publishers, large and small, we all meet twice a year. All the CEOs, we get together for two full days, and we talk through what are our trends, what are issues. We compare notes. It's a very refreshing time. There's not a single one of them in the last decade that hasn't laid off a third to half of their entire staff.
Wow.
We have been the exception to that rule, but I'm not sure how much longer, you know, Christian publishing as a whole is going to stay ahead of that curve. So United Methodist, I was just with Neil Alexander. He was talking to our entire group. He was hired in 1996. He's retiring this year, 21 years later. He said when he started, they were at 1,450 employees. They now have 450 employees. Lifeway was north of about 1,000. They're down in that, as I understand, 400, 450 range. You know, when I came to Randall House, we were about 42, 43. We're in that same number right now. That's exactly where we are. We've gone up and we've gone down. We've had our challenges. We continue to be challenged. Part of that issue is the electronic world, the internet, those free resources that are out there. Some of the challenges are pastors just continuing to change, and it keeps some confusion for the local church, but everybody's trying something different. Some are writing their own. Some are teaching only from, you know, God's word, so to speak. So there's a lot of other factors going into this. Church attendance as a whole, you know, you look at different stats. Most denominations are on a slight decline. There's no refuting that part of it. There are certain churches that are growing. Mm-hmm. But there's a renewed, I'm encouraged, there's a renewed emphasis on discipleship and family ministry, and has been for the last 4 or 5 years. But this world, I've told somebody the other day, if I were looking to get into an industry, I probably would not get into Christian publishing today if I were on the front end. But if I were thinking about somebody who was going to lead the organization, I would be scared to death to hire somebody from the outside who does not know what it entails, because the risk factors are too great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you guys are trying to provide biblically based books, curriculum, other resources to do the work of ministry, and in a way it's kind of the electronic age has put in our hands resources from so many different sources, some good, some bad.
Right.
And that kind of puts you guys in a very unique situation, to say the least. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, I think most denominational publishers, they would say that the people who they serve often don't view their own denominational publisher with the credibility to view somebody else. Mm-hmm. A lot of our growth has happened at Randall House with Southern Baptist churches because they're like, I don't want anything that comes from Lifeway. What's funny, you know, there are people within Free Will Baptist circles doesn't want anything that comes from Randall House. So it's not that we're more special. It's kind of like you don't get that credibility within the family. We've seen that with writers at times. Our writers at times ignore our deadlines, where if somebody's writing from the outside, they hit them every single time. And when we compare notes again to these other publishers, they say their own pastors treat them the same way. We don't view our own as credible because we know them, we know their background, we know their warts, and we don't lift them to the same high regard somebody from the outside does. We always view the other person as being more credible, if that makes sense.
Hmm. Well, now, when we think about Randall House and what you're doing, I think that one of the phrases that's going to pop into people's heads immediately is D6.
Yeah.
If you've been at any of our state association meetings or the National Association, certainly, that's going to be something that people associate with you guys. So in a nutshell, what is D6?
Sure. D6 is Deuteronomy 6, first and foremost. It is God's original plan for the church and the family. He always intended from Genesis chapter 1, be fruitful and multiply, to Deuteronomy 6, love me, love my word, teach your kids to do the same. And he goes on in verses 4 through 7 to say, through the daily rhythms and routines of life, when you get up in the morning, when you go out to school or work, when you come home, when you sit at the dinner table, when you tuck them in bed at night, look for teachable moments that you can carry over from church to home. So D6, in short, is church and home working together to build a biblical worldview into our kids from generation to generation. There's a saying out there that said it's about the next generation, and we challenge that and say, no, it's not. It's about every generation.
So would you say it's possible, then, to have a D6 mentality, a D6 philosophy, if you will, without the D6 curriculum and conference and products, but yet what you guys are trying to do is specially convey and reinforce D6 through what you're doing? Does that
absolutely
pretty well describe it?
There were D6 moms and dads way before we had a D6 conference. There were D6 teachers and dads before we had D6 curriculum. So I would say, and I have some heroes that, as a parent, my wife and I, Pam and I, we spotted some key older couples who were great moms and dads, great husbands and wives, we tried to model after before we ever came up with the term D6. So D6 literally is a mom or a dad that's intentional about teaching their kids. Now, a D6 church is intentional about making sure that what is taught in church goes home and gets reinforced throughout the week. So you don't need our curriculum, you don't need our conference, but you need intentionality. And parents, I'll tell you, need tools. So you'll either need to create them or find them from somebody so that they have easy wins at home for their kids, especially dads, because dads do not want to look stupid in front of their kids. They'll do anything if they're given the steps. And as pastors and ministry leaders, there are simple little things we can do to give them wins to fulfill Deuteronomy 6 or Ephesians chapter 6.
One of the things that I, in all of this, that I've appreciated especially is your book, The DNA of D6, which came out late last year, I believe. And having read that book recently, it's very fresh in my mind. The chapter, The Senior Pastor Complex,
yeah.
It was honestly, Ron, one of the most insightful and painful parts of the book as well. And it definitely showed that you have your finger on the pulse of an issue that really we're not comfortable talking about.
Right.
Was that chapter born more out of mostly out of your own observations and conversations with ministry leaders or just lessons learned in your own family life?
Yeah, it's born out of two things that took place. We launched the D6 conference in 2009. We launched what is now D6 curriculum in 2004. It was then called CLEAR, but it taught principles from Deuteronomy 6 and was born out of that whole plan. In 2009, our attempt was to have a family ministry conference where we had parents come together. I'll be honest with you, we really hoped that a lot of lay people would have attended the conference. We marketed, we positioned, but we're going through the gatekeepers of ministry leaders. What we didn't know was ministry leaders were going to become our primary audience, not parents. So when we look at the audience, 82% of the people attending the conference are ministry leaders, either in paid, part-time, or voluntary. And so when they came, now granted, they're also, most of them are parents, 90% of those are also parents, but we were teaching ministry leaders. 2009, 2010, every year at that conference, I had ministry leaders coming to me, and literally with tears in their eyes, I'll never forget, I can see two or three of them in my mind right now, and they said, Ron, we're on board. We've got other staff members that are here on board, but we can't get our lead pastor here. We can't get them on board to champion family ministry and what this means. How do we do that? I didn't have a good answer then. I began to dig in a little bit deeper, and here's what I discovered. Number one, most of the lead pastors were empty nesters or soon-to-be empty nesters, and they either had one child or multiple children that were either heading in a prodigal direction or had walked away from church. Maybe not from God yet, but they weren't where they needed to be, and the church knew it. Therefore, they did not feel like they could champion what they did not model. They did not want to be hypocritical. It was born out of a sincere concern of integrity. But this chapter, The Senior Pastor Complex, let me give you the second part before I go there. The second part, being very honest, if you read that, you also saw my admission that in the middle, about 2 to 3 years into this journey, my wife and I struggled with, you know, our daughter, who we observed were making some decisions that we didn't think was healthy. They weren't off the deep end yet, but we knew the trajectory was not good. Mm-hmm. And I even got real quiet. I'm like, how can I even be a voice for D6 in the midst of this period of time that I don't feel like I'm doing a good job as a dad? And the principles that my wife and I modeled with our daughter kept those lines of communication open that we wrote about in there. But we actually, in the Senior Pastor Complex, walk a pastor through sort of a restoration with their church and hopefully a renewed sense of communication to that son or daughter. And we give them step by step for healing and then teach them how to come alongside other parents in the church who are facing the same thing and desperately crying out for help.
And that really leads very naturally to this question about dialogue, conversation.
Yeah.
One of the very practical aspects of the book that I think follows quite naturally from what you were just saying is parents learning to dive more deeply into these spiritual conversations with their children, grandparents with their grandchildren.
Right.
But why do we even Why is that such a problem? What do you think are one or two or three reasons why that is even such a problem, such an obstacle that parents have to confront in the home?
Real simple. I think you said what's one or two, three problems? Earbuds, rectangles, and general friendships. As our kids get older, the earbuds go in. Conversations diminish between parents and kids. For all of our families, as our we all are having our heads in our phones, our tablets, our TVs, our computers,
that's
rectangles.
What you mean.
That's rectangles. The rectangle. So, I mean, we're literally staring at rectangles hours every day. And we're the most disconnected, connected society we've ever had. We're more connected with social media than we've ever been, but we can sit in the same room and have a total disconnect with those that are closest to us. And then our kids find affirmation from their peers, not from their parents. So parents have lost the art of being able to have any deep-level conversation. Oh, yeah, it's, hey, how was school today? Give me your highs, give me your lows. That's level one communication. But it doesn't probe the very heart and feelings of where a child is. And if we don't probe the heart and the feelings, then we'll never shape their beliefs and values for biblical worldviews. And we just got to teach our parents how to reconnect. And most of them, while they're upset that their kids have put in earbuds, they've actually gotten so attached to their phones, their devices, TV, that they've left their kids out too.
And if I may, that relates to something else, a figure that we often see on Randall House employee T-shirts.
Yeah.
This one out of 168.
That's right, the fraction.
Yeah. How does that connect to this discussion?
Absolutely. It's a fraction. It's been our best-selling T-shirt. It's a black shirt in the past, the way it first came out, with the 1 over 168 fraction. That's all it has on the front of the shirt. And people look and go, what's that? My first reply, just because it's always a conversation starter, say, I wish it was my tax bracket, but I certainly don't want it to be the slice of pie at grandma's house, you know, or chocolate cake or whatever. And what I mean by that is the research has shown, most people already know, that denominator 168 stands for the number of hours in a week. Look around at your church and realize that with people coming every other week, people, you know, missing, whatever they're doing, the average person in every church, adult, student, child, they get 1 hour of discipleship every week, and it comes from 30 minutes in either the pastor's message or a children's church or a youth pastor's message and 30 minutes in their life group, Sunday school, or small group. That's it. The other 167 hours are gone by the wayside because parents have delegated to the church leaders and experts and teachers the job of spiritually coaching their kids. And if mom and dad, research shows the number one spiritual influencers in a child's life is mom, dad, followed by grandma, then grandpa, then the lead pastor, above even the youth minister. If that's the case, why aren't we doing more to help mom and dad properly influence them in a biblical worldview?
So for the church then, as we kind of bring this to a real practical conclusion, when you think about a church that, let's just say, generational discipleship, that's just not on their radar.
That's right.
And a church that for whom family ministry has just not been a phrase or even a concept they're really engaged in, what is the number one place where that kind of church needs to start to move in a more faithful direction, to become, as it were, a D6 church?
Yeah.
What's the starting point?
Remember this. We're looking, the way God said in Deuteronomy chapter 6, to teach discipleship principles with the normal routines of life. That does not mean another class at church. That does not mean another meeting with teachers. We're meeting to death. And parents are already pulled in so many different directions. People aren't going to show up if you have the meetings. What we need to do is provide simple tools that they can take with them as part of the routines of life to reinforce what is taught in Scripture, in the sermons, and in the small groups and lessons. Whatever that looks like, whatever curriculum, whatever extra slide-in items we can do in the church program on Sunday morning, we've got to let it fit in with what Deuteronomy 6 says, when I rise up, when I go to bed, when I eat, when I go by the way. What can I include that becomes part of our DNA, our makeup, our lifestyle, that simply includes God with our conversations? And not every conversation needs to be a sermon. Now, don't get me wrong there. But churches should ask, how can I equip parents to keep this conversation going this week?
In a sense, that sounds very similar to a concept I've often been taught and tried to practice, of course. The idea as a preacher or teacher that you're trying to give your listener handles.
Yes.
Handles that attach to what is being conveyed so that people can grab hold of that and take that into their unique household, workplace,
right?
Monday through Saturday life. Yeah. Is that kind of what you're?
It does. Narrating? I mean, think about the reverse effect. Let's challenge everybody to diet one day a week. Let's challenge everybody to be a sports fan one day a week. You can't be a fan. You can't be you can't do anything, much less one day a week, much less 1 hour a week. So you're right. What handles can we put to make the difficult more easy? You know, that's when people think about improving the health of their lifestyle, whether it's dieting, exercise, it's got to be something that fits within. We got to do the same thing. And God's word fits, whether it's listening to it mobily, listening to it in the car, a simple question or two that we can text our parents, whatever fits into their lifestyle. Let's do it. I mean, let's figure it out. But if I were a fly on the wall, and I actually have been consulting with a number of churches and sat in staff meetings in various denominations and churches around the country, 99% of all conversations in staff meeting focus only on what happens at church. Their conversations never talk about what can we do for the parents at home. Mm. Is that not an indictment against what God originally commanded us to do? Mm. I think that's the key, is we got to get ministry leaders to think differently.
Mm. Yeah. Well, Ron, again, just what you've shared with us here at Grace Church this weekend so far, what you've shared with us here, I know will go a long way to helping people. They can obviously go to randallhouse.com.
Yes.
There's some other...
D6family.com is another resource. So Randall House is our publishing website. D6family.com is all family resources. And the two kind of work hand in hand, and you can find all kinds of resources there. We offer free things. Splink is something absolutely free they can sign up for. It's a spiritual link to their kids. This is parents of children, to give them three ideas to connect conversations or activities every single week. We have so many resources out there. We just want to help people. We have a D6 app that has family fun questions. They're not even spiritually based on every one of them, but it gets the parents talking. When they talk, then naturally the teachable moments occur. So just go and check out those. We just want to be a resource provider. I don't view us as a publisher. I view us as a ministry resource provider and a trainer.
Hmm. Well, on behalf of many of our forum readers and listeners, no doubt, are already benefiting from what you guys are doing. And so on just behalf of those, we say thank you.
Well, thank you, Jackson. It's been good. And thank you for listening. I've really enjoyed the time. Great questions you've tossed out.